Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
This past week, our president commuted the 14-year sentence of former Governor Rod Blagojevich. And we're familiar with two trials against him, one that resulted in a guilty conviction and then hung jury on the rest of the counts. And the second trial then resulted in numerous guilty verdicts. While many may not recall, is that Rod's brother, Robert, was pulled into this whole matter. Most say for no good reason. The jury hung on the count against him, and then the feds dropped all charges against Robert Blagojevich, realizing they basically had no case, but not at without a severe cost to Rob. He's the author of Fundraiser A, a book that talks about his plight, and he's here tonight with us to discuss what it was like to face the tremendous power that the federal government wields and how, against great odds, he was not convicted. And also why our prosecutors may be using their power in a way that might not be in the interest of justice. Welcome, Robert. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Just fine. Thanks for having me, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. I want to talk. I'm not going to talk about what everyone's talking about, which is your brother coming out and the commutation and all of those things. And I don't even want to talk about his guilt or innocence or any of those things. What I want to focus on is how you got wrapped up in this case and how maybe an average citizen could possibly be accused of something and have to undergo this kind of severe trauma, I would say. First, I just want to talk a little bit about your background. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background, which is greatly different than your brother Rod's.
Born and raised on the Northwest Side, went to public school, elementary school, Lane Tech High School, and then got an Army scholarship that pretty much paid for my college at the University of Tampa. Went on active duty for 5.5 years, probably the most formative time of my life, where I learned so many life lessons that even helped me prepare and survive the trial. After I got out of the Army, eventually moved to Nashville and got into financial services. I was in the private sector there for 18 years, primarily in money management brokerage. Ended up being a CEO of a company down in Tampa called Invest, and had a pretty big span of control. And then in 2004, launched my own business, Blagojevich Properties, where I now own 6 properties in apartment properties in 3 states, Kentucky, Tennessee, and northern Alabama. And in the middle of all that, I was indicted and went on trial with my brother. So it's been a full life.
So I guess I want to just make the point here that you and your brother kind of led different lives. I mean, you're probably more conservative politically. You weren't in the political realm. You were, doing your private thing. And tell us just briefly how you got involved in fundraising for your brother.
Yeah, Rod and I are, we came out of the same household, same values, but very different approaches to life's problems. And one of the reasons why I agreed to fundraise for Rod had to do with his lack of trust in the people that he had surrounded himself with. So in the summer of 2008, my wife Julie and I were visiting our son Alex, who was living and working in Chicago, and Rod asked me to come over to his house on 4th of July, of all days, to talk to me about something. And he had said, "I can't trust anybody in fundraising. I trust you. Would you mind doing this through the end of the year?" So I would have gone from August 1st through the end of December and helped him fundraise. Now, I have been in sales professionally, fairly professional guy in terms of interacting with people, knowing where the lines are drawn and so forth. And so my wife said to me when I asked her, because she would be the most inconvenienced with me living in Chicago and she being in Nashville and working at Vanderbilt University, that she had to give the okay. And her bottom line suggestion to me was, well, look, you and your brother have drifted away. He doesn't really know who you are or kind of what you might be able to do for him professionally. So I think your parents would really like you to help out your brother. And so there you go. Came up, stayed there and began fundraising. But I did go through a quick boot camp with some of his key advisors, a guy named John Wyma, a notorious fellow in this story, Bill Quinlan, his lawyer, Lon Monk, another notorious guy in this story, and Harris, who was his chief of staff.
Rob, let's
met with all of them.
I'm going to take a break here, but I want to get, when we come back, I want to get right away into how this prosecution happened, why you got brought in, and how you dealt with it. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're here talking to Rob Blagojevich, who is the brother of Rod Blagojevich, who was commuted, his sentence was commuted this week. And we're talking a little bit about his prosecution. He was involved in the prosecution. Charges were ultimately dropped. And I want to focus a little bit, Rob, on what happened. You committed to a certain four-month period where you were going to help your brother fundraise. You came up to Chicago. And can you tell our listeners what you saw in the political climate that was a little disturbing to you about how fundraising was done in the Chicago area?
Well, early on, I was told to never, when you speak to a donor, do a quid pro quo, which is representing that you could do a government favor for someone in exchange for campaign contributions. And so when I started making calls, and I was very productive in that, oftentimes I was asked for something in return for a contribution. I even testified to that fact where people were asking for something in exchange for a contribution. And my point always was, I'm not a part of the government. I'm a fundraiser, and I don't do that kind of thing. So it was very clear to me early on that the culture in the Chicago area was to ask for something in return. And I had nothing to give them other than an opportunity to meet Rod, invite him to one of their affairs and meet their friends and mingle and hopefully raise some money for him.
Now, at some point, you get brought into the prosecution, and the charges were not very strong. And in fact, you were told by the U.S. attorney that you could win the case, but they still tried to push you. They still tried to get you to commit to pleading guilty to something. Is that right?
Yes. The day after I was arraigned in Chicago in early 2009, Michael Ettinger, my attorney, exceptional lawyer, told me that he had gotten a call from the lead prosecutor who suggested that the brothers get together and come up with a global solution. And really what that translates to is for me to have gone to my brother and told him, look, you got to plead to something here so you can help me possibly get out of the charges. And of course, I never went to Rod, told Mike that's not something I'm interested in. And we then went on to trial. But there was no way I was going to cooperate with them because Mike had schooled me. The government was my enemy, which really surprised me. And so nothing they asked us ever was in my best interest. It was always in the government's best interest.
Tell our listeners, it's hard to encapsulate all of what happened during the time that you prepared for trial and the time you went on trial. But tell the listeners what it was like to prepare for trial, what toll it took on you and your family and your finances.
It was essentially a 24/7 involvement. I mean, we got a data dump from the government of 400 hours of wiretaps that we had to go through, each one in which I was involved in conversations of 50 days of wiretaps. So we would listen to the wiretaps. We would then Julie would participate in transcribing many of those wiretaps for the lawyers. We then, right prior to 30 days prior to trial, they gave us another data dump of 302s that we had to go through. So we were always working feverishly and quickly to organize the material because they give it to you. It's a dump. They don't organize it in any way. And so you've got to figure out where they were coming from with, you know, their evidence. And we had to do that, of course, with a very skilled legal team. But we were actively engaged in it. And, you know, every step of the way, I was writing big checks to my lawyers, which ultimately cost me all in nearly $1 million for a man who did nothing wrong except help his brother fundraise ethically and honestly.
And if you think about it, who has $1 million to spend on this and who has the time to do what you did? I mean, most people don't have $1 million sitting in a bank account. I mean, I know you had to mortgage your properties and you had to do all kinds of things. But it's just it shows you the massive resources that were against you. And for the average guy, it's almost insurmountable.
It is, and the government knows that, and they play to it very, very adroitly and very cynically. So they know that either you don't understand the charges very well, can't get good criminal defense, know you don't have the resources, and they get you to plead to something so they could avoid going to trial. And if your listeners may not know, but the federal government, DOJ, has a 96% conviction rate. So I was very fortunate to have walked away a free man as a 4% winner in that David Goliath battle, because you are so outnumbered with FBI, IRS, investigators, all paid by the government, all focused on defeating you and, of course, and my brother.
We've heard our president talk about overzealous prosecutors, and many defendants who have been charged over the years have echoed the same sentiment, that prosecutors are out of control, that their decisions are not transparent, they have no one really overseeing them, and that there is a political motivation in charging, convicting, and getting long sentences for certain politicians. Did you see that? Is that what you're saying happened here?
Well, Rod had been investigated almost from the time he took office, and there were rumblings that he was being investigated. And, of course, he was a high-profile target. You know, George Ryan, previous to him, was prosecuted, and Patrick Fitzgerald wanted another notch on his belt and was able to, through a guy named John Wyma, who was under investigation at the same time, to get him to get immunity in order to avoid his prosecution and come out against Rod. And it was a shameful thing for him to do because it was very harmful to Rod's defense and, you know, ultimately led to his conviction. But they put all kinds of pressure on you, and they know where the pressure points are with regard to the evidence and the fact that they have all day long and have the benefit of a deep bench of resources. So it's a very daunting task that you've got to get your mind around and be prepared.
You know, and I, from all accounts, and being in the legal community and having friends like Sam Adams and some of the people who tried the case, we heard that you were the good guy. You went and testified, and it was very compelling testimony. And in fact, the government didn't want to retry you because you probably helped your brother a great deal in that regard. So you were collateral damage. I mean, how does that make you feel that you had to go through this when, in fact, you were just a point person to try to get what they really wanted, which was to bring down the governor?
Well, I'm a veteran. I pay my taxes. Good citizen. Always thought that when someone was indicted that they had done something wrong. And then when it happened to me, it truly did open my eyes and realize that I, as his brother, was someone that they might be able to leverage and go after. Because it had been my sister-in-law who had been in the news about the possibility of being co-indicted with Rod, but I was told that thinking was they would be too sympathetic a couple to be prosecuted, and so because I was involved with Rod, that I would be someone else that they could go after, family member, and put pressure on Rod to plead, which never happened.
Now I'm going to take the other side of this, and I think we in Illinois have seen a lot of aldermen, a lot of representatives. We've seen person after person, mayors from small towns, are taking bribes or alleged to have taken bribes, and you know some of them are legitimate cases. You probably agree with that, and we keep seeing it. And even though there have been all these prosecutions and these long sentences, it seems to me that there's still this corruption and graft. So how do you balance the idea of we have to prosecute people in Illinois who do wrong things because we have to set the example and we have to deal with corruption and bribery because it's wrong, right? But on the other hand, how do we balance that with some discretion on the parts of the prosecutors to pick and choose who they prosecute, how they prosecute, and how they damage other people in the process? How should this be done?
Well, I would first say that there should be term limits for politicians at every level in our government, because as you get reelected over and over again, you get very comfortable and sloppy. And I think that has happened to a lot of people in politics. And the government, the federal government, understands that there are opportunities for them to go after these, I would say, opportunistic politicians who feel like they can get away with anything and they could get reelected. With regard to the prosecutors, there should be some type of an accountability for them within their organizational structure. If you bring false prosecution against someone, there should be accountability, such as being terminated at least, and never to have the opportunity then to go after another citizen who may have been wrongly prosecuted. And I'm one of many examples. And it's just not me. There are 200,000 people in federal prisons who pled guilty because prosecutors knew that they could get them to plead as opposed to going on trial. And they leverage all the instruments of government to bring you down. So I think it starts with term limits with the politicians, and then it becomes a question of holding these prosecutors accountable, even to the point where they need to make restitution to people that they falsely prosecute and pay their legal bills or do something to affect them and their personal lives, because all this to them is another client and a desire really to go win at all costs.
And remember, the goal of the prosecutor, and I'm going to read a sentence from the kind of the code of ethics of prosecutors, the primary duty of the prosecutor is to seek justice within the bounds of the law, not merely to convict. And, so personal advancement is not a consideration, but I do see that there are probably some prosecutors out there who make their name. I prosecuted Rod Blagojevich. I prosecuted George Ryan, and then they parlay that into a good job with a big law firm making a lot of money. And again, we all want to win, but prosecutors have a higher goal. Their goal is to represent the people of the state or the people of the government, and so the people of the country. So it's not just about winning. It's about doing justice, which is a very different goal than most lawyers in private sector. And so, yeah. I think you make a good point that they have to remember that somehow.
Well, there's no question. And I read that code of conduct while I was getting ready for trial, and I was aghast at the fact that I was having to do what I needed to do to defend myself and get through the most difficult period of my life, while these people had nothing that prevented them from moving forward to do bad things against me and my family. It still bothers me and angers me.
I have about 60 seconds. Are you happy for your brother?
Of course. I'm glad he's back with his daughters. He's got a lot of time to make up for, and I hope he optimizes it.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It took me a couple of years to rebound financially, but I'm smarter. I'm more vigilant, and I know now who my real friends are, and my family, close family, my wife, my son, my brothers-in-law, Tom, Eric, and Robert Thrailkill, and really good friends of mine in Nashville who stepped up for me at a time that a lot of people didn't call me when I could have used them. So you learn a lot through that, but above all, you got to believe in yourself, which I did, and do everything you can never to give the prosecutors the benefit of thinking they can bring you down and destroy your being and your character.
Rob Blagojevich, thank you so much for joining us. Author of Fundraiser A, a very good book. I read it this weekend. I highly recommend it. You can get it on Amazon. Thanks again, and good luck to you.